Welcome to Impact OC, the only program showcasing the people and organizations shaping Orange County, with your host, Don Camber.
Hello, live from the OC Talk Radio studios at UCI's Beal Applied Innovation Center. I'm OC Talk Radio Public Affairs Director Don Camber with another great guest impacting our community in a positive way. Today, I welcome South Coast Air Quality Management District Executive Officer Wayne Nastri. The South Coast AQMD's mission is to clean the air and protect the health of all residents in the district, which is home to more than 17 million people living in large areas of Los Angeles, Orange County, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties, including the Coachella Valley. Thank you, Wayne, for being on Impact OC.
Thanks, Don. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Wayne, please explain your district's role in complying with federal and state clean air standards.
Sure. So the South Coast AQMD is the local regulatory agency that's responsible for meeting the standards that are set by the federal and state government. And we also have vested authority to address certain type of sources. And when we look at sources, we look at, are they generally stationary or are they considered mobile sources? The mobile sources would be planes, trains, trucks, ships, cargo handling equipment at ports. That kind of material is considered mobile sources, and we actually have limited authority over that. The state and the federal government set the standards for those trucks, those trains, those planes, those ships. I'm sure, as you know, California is unique. California can set its own standards on those mobile sources, given its long history in dealing with air quality issues. Right, because California has been dealing with smog since the 40s. And as you know, unfortunately, South Coast region where we live is considered to have some of the worst air quality in the nation, particularly when it comes to ozone. So what we do is we look at those stationary sources like refineries, like gas stations, like power plants, like dry cleaners. We identify all of the sources that are there, and we identify what's the best way to control those emissions so that we meet the standards. And for us, the big standards have to deal with ozone, or what we call smog. And then the other big issue is fine particulate matter, or PM2.5. And so there are various standards that have been set. So for us, we have certain deadlines that we have to meet. And what we do is we develop plans to address the emissions so that they can get low enough so that we can meet the standards. It's not as if we have direct emission of smog. What we have is emissions of nitrogen oxides. And so what we do is we control those emissions generally from combustion sources, and so that we don't get the secondary formation in the atmosphere. Because what will happen is we get a lot of emissions that go into the air, and then in essence they're cooked by the sunlight, and you get smog. And then that smog gets transported from, let's say, the west side of our region along the coast, along to the east side, which is bordered by the mountains. And in these type of weather conditions in the winter, we get oftentimes inversion layers. And in those inversion layers, we get smog trapped. And so as a result of that, you can see sometimes we'll have various warnings that'll be issued, no burn days and the like. So what we do, and to address all of that, is we identify what the conditions are that contribute to smog, and then we identify the means in which to control those emissions so that the smog isn't formed. And so for us, what we do is we pass rules. So for instance, we've passed a number of rules that are designed to target, let's say, refineries. Refineries are some of the biggest sources of what we call NOx pollution. In fact, just last month, our board passed a very significant rule that's going to result in 7 to almost 8 tons per day of NOx emission reductions. And we have a certain carrying capacity that we have to try to get to, and it's going to be a big challenge for us, frankly, to get there. So what we do is we develop the rules, we enforce those rules, and then we work in partnership with the state and federal government so that they, too, can develop perhaps more refined rules that will also contribute to us. We've done a really good job. Now, I know a lot of people would say, well, wait a minute, I still see a lot of smog. You talk about no burn days. But the challenge, frankly, is that right now when we look at the pollution in our basin, nearly 80% of that pollution is coming from mobile sources. And as I just said, we don't have much authority to deal with mobile sources. And if you wanted me to be specific, I would say that the mobile sources that we probably see the greatest impact is on the goods movement. So think about all those ships that we have lined up outside our shoreline. And then think about all the trucks that have to take all those containers off those ships and transport them to the Inland Empire, where there's a lot of warehouses. And then from the warehouses, they're transported to various centers, including our own homes, through places like Amazon and things like that. So it's the goods movement sector that we really have to try to address to get to attainment, but it's also the most difficult for us since we don't have the direct authority. Now, we can have some authority, which we did recently with our warehouse indirect source rules, which we believe will get us anywhere from 1.5 to 3.5 tons per day of emission reductions, and that is significant. So we're trying to identify all those possible means where we can reduce emissions, work with the other state and federal governments to get them to reduce the standards for the manufacture of various trucks. So, for instance, right now we're looking at the federal government. We're working with the Congress to get US EPA to develop a new standard, which is 90% cleaner than the trucks that we see on the road today. And it's important because we have a significant amount of trucks that come from out of state. And so it's really important that the U.S. government set those national standards, while the state of California can set standards for the trucks inside the state. So it really is a very concerted effort working at the federal, state, and local level to define all the means that we can and to make sure that people are following those rules so that we can all benefit. And, you know, we get a lot of complaints. People can call our complaint hotline, 1-800-CUT-SMOG. And it can be on anything from that people smell odors, for instance, or people may see emissions from a facility where they can actually see smoke or some other kind of emission. And so based on our existing rules and authority, we may go out there, we may have a facility stop certain practices that are perhaps harming the community. And a lot of times that will come to us, again, through community complaints. And, for instance, there was a instance in Paramount where people were telling us that they had these funny smells and they couldn't quite pinpoint it, and they asked us to come in and to do sampling. And what we found out was that there were a number of metal plating and anodizing and chrome facilities, and that there was actually high concentrations of hexavalent chrome, which is a carcinogen, a very potent carcinogen. And it was something that we had learned because that was something that really people didn't think was occurring. And so we were able to identify a few facilities. We were able to get them to stop their operations that were causing those emissions for a short time. And we looked at what can be done to minimize those emissions. And so it's a very technical assessment in terms of the process, in terms of understanding what the end point is, because a lot of those facilities were manufacturing military components. And so you have to meet the mil specs and the things like that. So it's not just we can come in, pass a rule, and we're done. It takes a lot of time to research the nature of the process, to understand how you can control those emissions, to understand what the emission reductions are, to understand what the costs to society are as well. So we go through a lot of different machinations in understanding the socio impacts, the medical impacts, the public health impacts, the cost effectiveness impacts, and from that we develop a rule that we then take to our board for their consideration and ultimately their passage, or they'll tell us to go back and to work at it. But we've been pretty successful this past year developing two very significant rules. One is the refinery pollution rules that I just talked about, and then the other is the warehouse ISR that also was passed, I want to say, in May this year. And that really is designed to get warehouses and people in the goods movement sector to think about there's different technologies that they can use. There's different practices that they can employ that will result in fewer emissions and cleaner air. And that's in part what we try to do is we try to provide incentives. Because one of the things that we find is that we have a very important deadline coming up in 2023 for ozone. And frankly, we're not on track to meet that deadline. And the challenge that we have is that you can only implement regulations so fast. And the reason that is so is because a lot of times when you have equipment, that equipment can last a long time. And if you're looking at a diesel truck can last 30 plus years. And so they can still be on the road. So what we do is we look at incentives. And by that, what we do is we provide a certain amount of money to change from an older polluting technology to a cleaner, newer technology. Hopefully that technology will either be near zero or zero emission. So you hear a lot about electric vehicles, electric cars. We're focused on the electric heavy-duty trucks that transport goods from one area to another and trying to get those as clean as possible, trying to get, you know, locomotives to use electric switchers, again, as clean as possible, and looking at different treatment technologies for engines of ocean-going ships, because we get a significant amount of pollution from these ships, which use, you know, really, I would say, heavily concentrated segments of whether it's sulfur, whether it's hydrocarbons. Because they're from an international basis, they don't necessarily have to conform to certain requirements. And even when they're transiting across the Pacific or from wherever they're coming from, that pollution can still impact us. So whether we're working at the federal, state, or local level, we're trying to constantly identify partners, trying to identify people who are causing those emissions, working with them to understand those emissions. And while I talk about stationary sources and I talk about mobile sources, you know, there's other things that we look at too. Consumer products, for instance, paints, you know, urethanes, lacquers, they contain a lot of volatile organic compounds, VOCs. And those also contribute to part of the pollution that we have. For us, you know, we have a number of scientists, many right here from UC Irvine, a number of graduates in atmospheric chemistry and the like. And what we found is that while controlling volatile organic compounds is important, the most overwhelming thing that we can do to improve air quality is to reduce emissions from internal combustion engines and oxides of nitrogen, nitrogen oxides. So that's kind of where we focus our effort. It's pretty broad. And, you know, part of that is also reaching out to the community, making sure that people understand what our role is, that people can call us and let us know about issues. And to the extent that we can respond and do certain things, we certainly try to do those.
Now, you have reporting stations all over the region. Explain that.
So we actually have a number of federal reference monitors throughout the region. I want to say I think we have about 32 federal reference monitors throughout the region. And what those do is they take samples constantly. We're looking at either particulate matter concentrations or we're looking at ozone concentrations. And from that, you can actually get an understanding of what the pollution is looking like. We also happen to have a mobile app that you can download on your phone. It's called South Coast AQMD. And it will actually tell you down to a certain grid size what the projected air quality is. This is really important for parents with young children that may be subject to respiratory ailments or asthma attacks. And it gives you an opportunity because you can actually get forecasts on an hourly basis. So you might be able to see, for instance, hey, maybe I shouldn't go out midday. Maybe it makes more sense to try to go out early in the morning or late in the afternoon. Those kind of tools are, again, targeted toward increasing awareness about what air pollution is at the current level, what it means. Because, you know, we have from different levels, you can say, you know, air quality is good, it's moderate, it's perhaps unhealthy for sensitive, or it's unhealthy, or it's dangerous, right? You may see that during some of the wildfire incidents when you have high PM, where people will say the pollution is actually higher than what we've seen in China or India. I think we all remember last year when the sky was a deep orange. It was almost apocalyptic, right? And that's all because of the air pollution and the impacts.
So who makes the call in terms of the advisories, and what are the advisories?
So we have a number of advisories. The advisories are technically led. So I know a lot of times people will say, well, don't you approve that? I'm like, I don't even get involved on the designation. It's all, if the pollution reaches a certain level, they're automatically issued. So it's not a judgment call. It's, if that's what it is, that's what it is. And that really gets to the heart of what the South Coast AQMD is about. It's a very scientific-based organization. with a lot of expertise in atmospheric chemistry and pollution and engineering controls and the like. So we have a number of meteorologists on site, and we do constantly look at forecasts. We work with other organizations such as NOAA or the Weather Service, and we look at the various tools that are out there. And if we can, for instance, see an inversion layer and we know that we have high particulate matter, that we can actually forecast what those conditions are. And when the forecast shows that we're going to be in certain levels, that's when the advisory is issued. So right now I know we have an advisory issued. There's a no-burn alert. So, for instance, that means no wood-burning fireplaces right now. There are a few exceptions if it's your sole source of heat, but I think right now in these Santa Ana conditions, you know, heat's not going to be an issue unless you're at altitude. And there's, again, certain conditions. But what we're really trying to do is to minimize the amount of pollution that's going into the air and that would perhaps cause more health problems for more people were it not controlled.
So you're talking about these advisories, and these advisories could be for different regions, not necessarily all over the region.
And I would say that the best thing to do is to look at the app, because, again, the app will show some of the specific areas. So you will probably recall when we had some of the wildfire incidents earlier this year, last year, certainly in the mountainous regions or in the eastern regions, based on the wind conditions, it was blowing the smoke and the PM a certain direction. So you may have seen impacts in northwest L.A. County, but maybe not so much in South Orange County. So it's really important to understand the conditions. And that, again, I would strongly urge people to utilize our app to see what the conditions are in their area. And you also have an ability in those apps to get alerts as they're issued. So it's a good way to get notified when one of those advisories are being issued.
And we want to point out the purpose of you is to make sure we have clean air so that there won't be any health problems. Why don't you explain to us some of the health problems people could have if the pollution was pretty bad?
Yeah, well, boy, we've had a long history of health problems in our region associated with smog. And as you can imagine, a lot of those are respiratory problems. So I think a lot of people are aware of studies that showed that children that are exposed to high levels of pollution have limited lung development. And you can imagine that if you're sensitive to these air pollution, you know, I, for instance, can remember being a kid growing up here in Southern California, and you literally could not run because you couldn't breathe. It hurt on your side. It hurt to take a deep breath. You know, thank goodness that the air quality has improved so much since then. And that's a really important point, Don, and that is that over the last several decades, our air quality has gone down tremendously in spite of a growing population, in spite of a growing number of vehicles. And in large part, that is due to the rules and regulations that have been passed by the South Coast AQMD, the California Air Resources Board, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. So what we want to do is make sure that those respiratory problems, whether it be pulmonary development impacts, or whether it be nausea, whether it be a whole host of features that can happen when you can't breathe, that those are minimized. And that's really the whole function of having standards in place, right? Those standards say at this level it's safe for most people. And so we know right now that at the levels that we have, it's not safe. And that's why we're trying to do as much as we can to reduce those levels. And obviously not everybody reacts the same way. So some people may not be as affected, but certainly sensitive individuals and others, you know, it's a challenge. And we know from the pollution that we have in our basin that we actually suffer almost 4,000 premature deaths in our region alone because of air pollution. And so we have a long way to go, and that's certainly something that we're going to continue to fight for cleaner air.
But what can us consumers do to help the cause?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a lot of things that we can do as consumers. And I think one of the things that you know, you hear a lot about is, hey, do you really need to drive there? Do you need to order something? And I say order something because think about it. We as a society have shifted how we get our goods. A lot of people nowadays go online, they order from Amazon, and we have trucks delivering material to us. And so part of the challenge, I think, is that we as consumers need to demand that if people are going to deliver goods to us, they should be using the cleanest technology. They should be using battery electric or fuel cell electric, something with zero emissions. I think that's one thing that we as consumers have a tremendous power to demand, that we have cleaner delivery, which will result in cleaner air. And then I think we have to also constantly assess our own actions. Are we conserving energy? You know, the governor came out with a proclamation that basically allows for extra generation, because this summer we were 2,500 megawatts short, and next summer there's a projection of 5,000 megawatts shortage. And so we have to be able to conserve energy, and we have to make sure that the energy that is being utilized is being done as efficiently and as smartly as possible. We should try to demand a transition to cleaner renewable powers, you know, whether we're using solar on our own powers combined with batteries, or we're just using cleaner technology to reduce those emission levels. You know, there's a lot of things that people will look at, whether it's their heaters and their air conditioners, to make sure that the energy is being utilized efficiently. So you want to be able to take a look at some of that information when you buy products, much in the same way that you're probably familiar with the Energy Smart program, right? When you buy an appliance, you can sort of see what the energy usage is. The more efficient it is on the energy usage, the more efficient it's going to be from a pollution perspective. And by that, I mean keeping those emissions low. So we can look at a lot of things, but I think, like you're saying, Don, let's make sure that we're utilizing the cleanest modes of travel, that we're not traveling where we don't necessarily need to, and that we're, as consumers, demanding that people provide us products in the cleanest way possible.
Thank you, South Coast Air Quality Management District Executive Officer Wade Vastry, for being on Impact OC. And I thank everyone for tuning in. I'm OC Talk Radio Public Affairs Director Dawn Camber. Have an impactful day.
You've been listening to Impact OC, the only program showcasing the people and organizations shaping our community. Right here on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio.